you won't ever find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Now tuned into the greatest. Turn the music up in the headphones. Tim, you can go and brush your shoulder off, and I got you.
Welcome to the latest Wicked Chops podcast, special edition. We've got on the line, Colin. How you doing?
Pretty good. How you doing, Chops?
All right. And special guest, and hopefully what will become a frequent guest, Jeff Holsey. He's the man responsible for the WPT tournament reporting, what we always say is the best in the field. He is our resident TV expert. He took some umbrage with our last podcast that Colin and I did, breaking down some of the best in entertainment a couple of weeks ago. But he'll be on board to talk some PCA TV and talk about, I think, what everybody's really tuning in for this podcast for, American Idol. Jeff, or as we call you, Slim, how you doing?
Good to be here.
Yeah. Yeah, like we said, we want this to be regular with you. We want you to be a part of this. So,
well, if you keep making claims like you did in that podcast, I'll have to be on because, I mean, we'll get there, but it was pretty sad.
All right, we'll get there. Like you said, let's save that. Let's get into the PCA talk first. As most of you know, the 2011 PCA main event wrapped this weekend with a close to live withhold cards broadcast on ESPN2. Over the course of, how long would you say it was, Slim? Maybe like 14, 15 hours?
On ESPN, I mean, it felt that way.
Yeah, it was a long time. They did a lot of things really well. They could have improved in some areas. So we're going to talk a little bit about that first. I guess I can start it off, you know, as having sat down and flipped through between that and the absolute humiliation of the Falcons and to the Packers, which was just brutally painful as an Atlanta guy to watch.
Packer.
But for you, Colin, as pseudo Wisconsiner, not bad.
Yeah, and I kind of married into it, but definitely a pretty diehard Packers fan.
So,
very happy about that.
Yeah, so I was even, the game sucked, and I was even less happy about having to flip to the PCA in these bursts. Now, from a broadcast quality perspective, Slim, you're around the World Poker Tour broadcast, obviously you have been for years. How do you think, just technically and aesthetically, that broadcast looked?
I thought it was amazing. I mean, especially for doing it live and, you know, the first time with the whole cards. I mean, it looked phenomenal. It looked like a post-produced show like you would normally see, but, you know, they were showing it live. So I thought I read your post today, and I agree with most of it. I thought Daniel and the British guy did a great job.
Do we know his name yet? Does anybody know his name? I actually purposely kept from learning his name just so I could credibly refer to him as the British guy. But do we know his name or what his background is?
Is his name John Hartigan?
Maybe. Is it? Is he of renown overseas?
I don't know. I think he does all the EPT live streamings. I mean, that's where I...
Okay.
Yeah, I think he does the EPT. I think didn't he do the WSOP Europe broadcast too, or the ESPN3 live broadcast for the WSOP Europe?
He might. He does such a good job, we don't even know.
Yeah.
But he did a great job, and now I kind of feel somewhat ignorant that he's been doing quite a lot of broadcasts and I'm not aware of. But, yeah, they both did, you know, a pretty good job on moving, or at least keeping the dialogue moving and filling up what is an awful lot of airtime. And, you know, impressive job by him and by Daniel for, you know, being able to fill in the holes because, let's face it, the people at the final table were not doing a good job of keeping the conversation going themselves. Not that it's their job.
Hey, Chop,
yeah.
For people who missed it like I did, I did not see any of it. I haven't seen anything online after the fact. So it was live. It was delayed by an hour, right? right?
Yeah, an hour. I don't know if it was even a little bit more than an hour, but it was an hour, and everybody was sequestered. And from what I understand, they actually did a pretty phenomenal job on making sure there were no leaks and no ability for anybody to get any information out.
I know you said you were joking about 14, 15 hours, but like, how long actually was it?
Till
it started at, like, on ESPN2. I believe it started at 7 p.m. our time, right?
Yep.
I think it ended a little after 1:30 a.m.
Yeah, that's about right.
Okay. And then, how many players did it start with?
Eight. Started with eight. Yeah, I think they usually go with eight. So yeah, it started with eight. And I think they were down to four relatively quickly. But then heads up became just a grind, especially because Chris Oliver, the heavyset fellow with the crooked hat, had a monster lead that the Galen Hall just methodically chipped away at and then, you know, eventually overtook. But it took a while to get there.
Without having watched it. I mean, would it make sense to start with eight? Would it make sense to start with six or even wait till they're down to four or five? That's something that we always talk about, even with the November 9, that it's you have so many players at the table to try to make it compelling or interesting, or, you know, obviously with a lot of players at the table, it gets kind of, more players at the table, the more kind of boring it is, less action. I mean, would it make more sense to start with just six players and then go live then?
Yeah, I mean, that kind of would for the TV broadcast. Kind of feels like it makes sense. I don't know, Slim, as a WPT guy, was that, and I know you weren't there from the genesis, from the beginning of it all, but was that a conscious decision that you guys made, that six was just going to be more action-heavy, easier to tell stories?
From my understanding is the reason, you know, they went six, which is obviously a non-standard, you know, final tables in poker for the final nine. So the reason they went six was so that you can get that in a reasonable time. You can tell the stories, you know, with nine. It's just a little unmanageable for at what we were doing at that time at 2 hours.
Right.
To be able to tell all of the stories. But, you know, with it being live, it's really difficult. You can start with four players, and it could be over in an hour. It could be over in 10 hours. You know, you just never know. And I think that's the hard part with live poker on TV, showing every single hand. While that's great, there's no reasonable ending point. You know, even when they were heads up, you didn't know if you could flip away, you know, like, I can flip back and be generally certain that it's going to end soon, you know?
Yeah.
You know.
So what do you think? Do you think that I've always believed that poker is not going to make that, one of the things that's going to keep poker from making that next big leap forward into the public consciousness as a major sporting type event is the fact that it can't be done live. And it can't be broadcast live. This was a great experiment into making that happen and making it work. But what do you guys think? Do you think that we're ever going to get to a point where we can have like a really professional-looking, solid broadcast of poker live on TV?
Well, I mean, the main thing is poker is boring, right? Like, when you watch it live, hand for hand,
how dare you?
It's pretty boring.
Yeah, no, watching it live is tough.
What's that?
I said I agree that watching it live, like as a spectator, is pretty brutal, especially not knowing the whole cards.
And it's really difficult. And I mean, another sport that's really boring to watch live is golf, but they seem to do it, and they have long broadcasts as well. But theirs are on Sundays in the middle of the day. It's kind of sleepy. You know, you're kind of hanging out. You're like, you're watching, but you know that it's going to end around 4:30, 5 o'clock. I can tune into the back nine if I want. I know,
right.
You know, when they're getting down to the final few holes. Whereas with poker, you know, Iron Chef is on. I'm going to flip over while they're heads up because I know that this is going to be a while. And flip back.
Yeah, that's the one thing that poker, you know, just inherent in the game is that it has the only set parameter is that somebody ends up with all the chips at the end. You know, it's not. Golf at least has, you know, a number of holes. You know, every other sport has, you know, time constraints. You know, so the fact that poker is a broadcast, you never know if it's going to run, you know, an hour or, you know,
This is probably one of the worst ideas that I've ever had, but do you think that there could ever be a possibility where, let's say, you take a 6 or 9 person final table and you gave it a set time parameter, and wherever you finished chip wise is where you finished and for the tournament, and that's ever going to be a possibility? Or is that just completely fly in the face of everything about tournament poker?
I mean, I don't think that would work. I mean, I would rather do what we do now and just edit it down. And, okay, I have to wait a little bit longer, but, you know, the better that the production companies get at turning these things around quickly, you know, if they could take that final table like they do with the November 9 and flip it around in a day, flip it around in 2 days, it's not that big of a deal that I'm finding out a day later, especially for, you know, like the casual viewer who doesn't follow it online, who isn't looking. You know, it's not quite like football or basketball where, you know, you need to watch it live. I don't think you need to watch it live. I think it can be edited down and be just as exciting.
Okay. Slim, for World Poker Tour this season, I think you guys just announced your air dates, correct?
Yeah, I don't know if it was officially sent out. I saw that it was posted at 2+2.
Okay. I feel like I got a press release on it.
Okay.
All right. So, you think this is going to be your best season there? I mean, you've been to all the tournaments, so is it shaping up with this new broadcast format that this is going to be, you know, bigger, better than ever?
I think so. I mean, I'm really excited about it. You know, the preview clip that's been out there is a good example of the new exciting features that are going to be there. And we've been, you know, another thing with poker is you don't know who's going to be at that final table. So a lot of it's out of your control, right?
Sure.
You know, that final table, we could be sitting here, if it ended up being Phil Ivey against whoever and he wins, we'd be like, oh, that was the most amazing live broadcast ever, you know. But for us, I think we've had some really great final tables this year. We've been really lucky to have, you know, Dwight Pilgrim's episode is going to be awesome. And then
Black Phil Ivey, as a matter of fact, Dwight Pilgrim.
There you go. You know, you just throw in all the new elements and mix it together and showing some of the early day footage that hasn't been seen before. And, you know, of course, Kimberly being so involved, I think it's just going to be...
By involved, you mean attractive, right?
Well, I mean, that goes without saying. I mean, the more you put her on the screen, the better the show is going to be, right?
So yeah. She's good on camera.
Central figure. Yeah, definitely. So, you know, I think it's shaping up to be the best season yet.
You know, one of the things that we talked
about... Jeff, I forget, will I be able to see, what's the lingo, is it VPIP or VPIP, when I'm watching the WPT broadcast?
can you not do that?
There will be no VPIP, I don't believe, in the broadcast.
Okay, are they gonna end up, maybe you guys have already done it, but like where you used to explain with graphic overlays, terminology, have you guys already covered 3-bet, 4-bet, and I mean, those are the simplest ones. There's a lot of stuff that are just in the terminology and lexicon that I don't know anymore, but are you still doing that?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a couple of new segments where we have the players actually explain some of the new lingo that's coming out, because it's always evolving. You know, it's hard enough, you know, keeping up with it for the people that are in the poker industry, let alone the people that are at home and, oh, I'm going to watch the WPT tonight. You know, what are they talking about? VPIP even 3-bet, you know, what is a 3-bet? And I think there will be a lot of explanation of that, and I think that'll be a good segment.
So one of the things that we talked about in the post today, and one thing that WBT was awesome at early in the day, was building characters and personal stories. And it feels like all the broadcasts have moved away from that and gone more poker heavy. Do you guys spend a lot of time profiling your final tableist now?
Yeah, I mean, in my mind, that's always been the strength of WPT. I mean, the one thing we've done better than anybody else, and, you know, that's what Mike and Vince do really well. You know, Mike gives that weight to these players, and he knows the history of the game, and it kind of adds, it rounds out the player, and there's always the packages with the interviews of each player and getting to know them, and you know, even all of those little things like their nicknames and some of that stuff that just kind of builds them into a character instead of just somebody at a poker table, because when you're playing for that much money, no one's going to be that talkative at a final table. You know, it gets pretty serious. And
except for Blackville Ivy, right? He was pretty talkative.
I mean, he's off the charts. That's the one where you wanted to go 4 hours instead of 2 hours.
Right.
Because you can't fit all of his quotes in there. I mean, when we were writing it up for live updates, people were accusing us of, you know, like, kind of being effusive towards Dwight, but we were just literally writing down word for word just what he was saying. You know, he was just nonstop talking.
Right. Plus, it's got to be a nice welcome break for you guys where, you know, for the most part, you're not getting anything from these people. And, you know, Dwight was providing you with endless material.
Oh, for sure. And it's always, you know, when we're playing down, everyone's kind of like, oh, he's going to be so good for TV. But at the end of it, there's really not that much table talk or table banter. All of that, you know, unless you have Phil Locke or unless you're doing push-ups or you have Dwight, you know, kind of talking his trash, you just don't have that. So you it's up to, you know, the announcers and the production team to build that up. And I think that's what the WPT has always been really good at, and you'll continue to see that.
Man, I'll tell you, you got the company lined down pat, man. I'm impressed.
I know.
You do well. It's like you got media training. Okay, so let's wrap this conversation up. Colin, do you think that live-ish poker will ever have a permanent place on TV?
I don't think so on TV. I think what Jeff said, I think you'll see better turnaround on, you know, kind of poker being produced and, you know, more semi-live, still with packages and kind of focusing on characters and not just what happens at the table. But I think definitely online, you know, with ESPN3 and other live broadcasts, you'll see that. And I think that satisfies the diehard poker fan. I think it's, you know, just as fun watching it online as it is on TV for that type of poker fan. So.
And Slim, you got anything to add there?
No, I mean, I agree with Colin. Like, there's nothing wrong with online being the place for it. I mean, that's kind of where most everything's moving anyway. So, you know, find a way for it to work online, and I think you'll be fine. I mean, it's very expensive to do these shows, and I'm sure that I can't even imagine how much it was for PokerStars to put that on. And unless somebody wants to step up and pay that every time, it's just not going to happen. So I think there's a good place for it online.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that's the main point there, is that does TV cost money, and TV requires advertising, and I don't think PokerStars, you know, can come out of pocket and make it a time box every time they want to do a, you know, a live tournament on TV. It just wouldn't make sense dollars-wise, so
yeah.
You're not going to have advertising.
Right, it's not like golf. It's not like golf where you're getting those huge sponsorship deals that allow them to put that on regardless of the ratings. So.
Yeah. Okay, well, while we may agree all on that, I know one thing that we did not agree on was, and another reason why we have Slim on this call, was one of our most recent podcasts where Colin and I were breaking down The Walking Dead and decided that it was among the best first seasons of a show ever. Slim, you hated the show.
No, well, you didn't say it was among. You said it was the best and that you can't even really think of something that was even close.
And John, real quick, you should set this up that generally the three of us agree when it comes to entertainment.
Oh, yeah, across the board.
Whether it's films or TV, so this is pretty surprising.
It's almost unprecedented that Slim would disagree with us on something.
Well, yeah. That's true. All it kind of showed me was that you guys don't watch enough TV, is really kind of what it was.
That could be the case, actually.
You know.
Because you're pretty much like, you're a TV, not junkie necessarily, but how about a connoisseur?
I would take that label. I would take the connoisseur label. I did not hate The Walking Dead. Let's start right there.
Well, because I haven't heard you say one positive thing about that show. And I mean, it was brilliant. I just got through. You know, we were talking about this last night. Just got through watching a 2-day marathon of the epic six episode season, best six episodes of any first season ever. And again, it just reinforced how brilliant it was, but all you've done is bash it. So what's your problem with the show?
My problem was just with the premise that it's the greatest of all time when there are shows. Maybe you haven't seen it, and if you haven't seen it, if you haven't seen The Wire, then we should just end the discussion right now, because that season one versus season one, we're not talking about, the best series that series had, but if you go season one to season one, you go The Wire versus The Walking Dead. I mean, it's really no contest. The Sopranos season one, you've got.
I don't know, man. I've done The Sopranos season one, and I think Walking Dead. And this is just isn't because of its recent history, but I think in the six episodes of The Walking Dead, you're almost lockstep with Sopranos. Colin, did you see the first season of Sopranos?
Yeah, I did. I'm trying to remember just kind of the impression at the time. I don't think the impact was the same as The Walking Dead. As far as I think Sopranos was, I was kind of just watching it evolve at the time and seeing where it took me. Where The Walking Dead put you in a situation that from the first episode, it was you're like, okay, I'm going to be a part of this the whole season, and I can't wait for the second season to see where things go. So I think. Where Sopranos first season was a little bit more of an evolution process for me as a fan, that The Walking Dead was right away. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. I know who it doesn't make sense to, and that's Mr. Slim on the other line. Is it just because you're scared of zombies? Is that what it comes down to?
I love zombies, and I think that's maybe what it, zombies are the cool thing right now, so maybe you're being a little influenced by... Okay.
What else? Everybody's saying zombies are the new vampires. What other zombie show is out there? There's no zombies out there. It's one show.
Chops, I don't want to say that it's racist, because I would never make a claim against anybody, but this could be a West Coast, East Coast balance of bias by Slim. Because these are Southerners, it's based in Atlanta. I think if this was in L.A.
If this was in Santa Monica with a bunch of trendy a-holes drinking lattes, Slim would think this was the best show I ever fucking made.
Wait, hold on. my favorite show of all time is The Wire, which is set in Baltimore, in the inner cities of Baltimore. But it's an East Coast, West Coast thing? No. And you're going to claim that these guys are real Southerners? Is that even an accent that the guy has? I mean, what is that?
I'm a Southerner. Do I have an accent?
Okay. Fair point. I will say this about Walking Dead. The pilot was amazing. After the pilot, I was like, this show's great. I'm not saying the show's not even great. I give it a solid B+ for the season. I feel like... In the middle there...
God, I'm glad you're not a teacher.
In the middle, it just kind of dipped down. I don't think the characters were very strong. That's my main point.
Do you see, where the show... I mean, kind of what they set up with this first season. And again, this is... I mean, I think I could watch the first, six shows, first season, and just kind of, it was so awesome from start to finish that, I'd be happy if that was it. But now I really, the way they set it up with the characters, is she pregnant? Is it, is it, God, I'm drawing a blank on his name.
The Hispanic man.
Shane.
Shane.
Yeah, is it his kid? I think, I don't know. I think what it's setting up is this is going to make the second season great, but the, what I love about it just comes down to just basic, human survival and how people would respond in a tight-knit group like that with all the differences and all the complexities. When it comes down to just basic survival, when you need each other, but at the same time you have all the just normal stuff that.
Shit.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he didn't come in until, like, season three or four, right?
What's that?
He didn't come into the equation until, like, season three or four, right?
Right. A little bit later.
So how can The Wire be the best first season of a show if it didn't even have him in it yet?
The Wire has about 30 characters.
That's way too many characters.
Takes a little time to get into, but their characters were all strong. Their characters
if it takes a little time to get into, then how is the first season the best season ever?
Well, it wasn't just six episodes. It was, you know.
But that's why the Walking Dead, it was just six episodes.
That's what's so amazing, yeah.
Well, I think the better comparison would be, I like The Walking Dead. I'm just not ready to put it in the pantheon of greatest shows ever. I think we can compare it to first season of Breaking Bad, which Breaking Bad had seven episodes to the six of The Walking Dead because it was shortened by the writer strike, and it has the same kind of despair, like depressing kind of tone to it. And I just feel like the characters and the writing are just a little more fleshed out. I felt like Walking Dead is just a little hollow. Like, yes, the characters, there was the typical, you know, hick, and then there's the typical black guy, and then there's the typical white beater.
Yeah, no, I'm reading in between the lines. I'm reading in between the lines.
But there was nothing more to any of those people. Like, I didn't really care about any of those people. And I remember especially towards the end when it got more and more, like, lost, like when they get to the CDC at the end, kind of like the Hatch, and,
right.
You know, they're kind of ripping off that storyline. I just kept thinking, man, this would be perfect, like, setting scenario for the Lost kind of formula. It was a shame that kind of Lost had already done it, because I think the flashbacks...
Yeah.
The way that Lost fleshed out their characters, and we got to know them, you know, fairly quickly, and we got to, you know, there was much more to John Locke than, like, the crazy man sitting on the beach that we saw at the beginning, you know,
right.
To find out that he's in the wheelchair and all of that stuff. So I just felt like...
That actually is a fair point, and not to make your argument for you, but because they're not doing flashbacks to let you in on the characters, they are somewhat relying on stereotypes that people like you rely upon.
Did you notice how he said those people?
Right. They're kind of relying on the stereotypes to develop or at least to establish those characters.
But it feels a little... I don't know, not lazy, but it feels a little obvious, right? It's, yeah, okay, we get it, like, the zombies are here, but we still have this conflict, you know? It just, I like it to be, and it is a product of just, they didn't know they were going to have more than six episodes, and they had to jam all these people in fairly quickly. So I imagine if they would have had 13 episodes that some of these people would be fleshed out, characters would be fleshed out a little bit better, so... But that is why I can't put it into the greatest of all time, or even say that it's the greatest of all time. It still can be good, but it has some ways to go in my mind.
So you just didn't like it?
Because you brought up The Wire. When you watch The Wire, when the show ends that week, are you so anxious to watch the next week right away?
I mean,
is it
for sure? Like. We caught up on DVD, and it was pop the next DVD, it's 2:30 in the morning, and you're like, can we fit one more in? Yeah, pop the next DVD. And I never really got that sense from Walking Dead, you know, especially in the middle, I was just kind of like, okay, when it was over, wait until I see the next one. And even the season finale, which, you know, I guess they needed to make it almost like a series finale just in case they didn't come back, but I wasn't like hanging on to the one whisper, you know, I was just kind of like, okay, you know.
And I guess I guess just from a, you know, here's where we differ on it. That's probably where I differ from you the most on it, is because I mean, I literally cannot wait. When that episode ended, when every episode ended, I was so bummed and so like, man, I got to wait a week for the next one. This is ridiculous. And or, you know, some things get DVR treatment and I'll hop in, you know, 30 minutes late. Walking Dead got East Coast HD treatment where I'm watching, you know, the 6 o'clock show, trying to get my kid to bed as early as I possibly can so she doesn't have to watch it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was the same way. I'm a huge Dexter fan, so I would watch Dexter and Walking Dead back to back, have crazy dreams that night, but just be so anxious to, you know, fast forward a week and see the next episode.
One question, lingering question, and it popped back into my head yesterday after I watched the finale again, and there was that odd sexual tension between the black girl and Truman's best friend, but he was describing how, you know, Truman's best friend, how the virus or whatever it is takes hold and it just kind of basic human functions, but no real personality or soul. But, you know, part of basic human functions is procreating. Do you think zombies are, you know, think zombies are knocking it out?
Have we seen that in any of the other zombie stories?
I don't think I've ever seen another zombie movie. Maybe that that one with that 28 days later, the next 20, whatever. I think that was the only other one.
Yeah, I don't know. You would think, like, if they were basic human functions, that would be one of them. And maybe, you know, they need to have enough stuff. If they're going to take this 3 seasons, 4 seasons, they're going to need, I mean, what are they going to do? They either need to cure this thing or they're all going to die, right? So
the zombies would have to die off eventually, right, if they don't eat.
That's another good question. Like, if they don't eat...
So they have to procreate.
Right. So maybe that's a storyline down the way, but I'm not a zombie expert by any means, but I don't recall any other... Like, I've never seen, like, zombie babies being born, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, I don't know.
Awful visual. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
I think I just want to move on to the next topic now.
Yeah. One more thing. Does it not bother you that
it doesn't?
They just camp out in the middle of the woods with no, like, barriers or, you know, couldn't they find some, like, at least the gang in the hospital, they were smart enough to, like, kind of barricade themselves in a place, but these people were just out in the woods randomly where anyone could come up on anything.
I don't think so necessarily. They were trying to get away from the city, and the city is where all the zombies were. I'd rather go.
Couldn't you roll up on like a farmhouse somewhere and at least have a perimeter and you can have kind of.
But then you're kind of trapped in. I don't know. I'm not sure.
As far as this is, we're not watching and we don't care about these people because they're the smartest people when it comes to, you know, protecting themselves from zombies. But I mean, I think the setting obviously lends itself to the surprise that when they're sitting around a fire, I think some of the most dispensable scenes were just kind of those quiet scenes where you don't think anything's going to happen, but, you know, it's kind of like picture yourself sitting around a fire and wondering if somebody's going to come up from behind you. I think that, you know, like Chops and I have talked about that before. Just, I think that the suspense that the show is able to create in certain scenes when it wasn't really obvious, I thought was pretty good. I mean, to me, that's what I liked about it. I always was expecting, even when it was just kind of a conversation between two people, that, you know, something was going to happen.
That's true.
But yeah, I mean, again, they're not, you know, we're not watching it because we think they're the smartest people out there. But
because he decided to go back into Atlanta for just one bag of guns instead
of
finding another place. Like, couldn't you just go find guns somewhere else? I mean, I don't know.
But yeah, maybe not. I mean, you don't know what...
If I had any great... Those are my two gripes. Everything else I liked. I just don't think it's the best ever. That's all.
Boy, sure. I mean, I think... I don't know if you said one positive thing about the whole freaking show. All right. Well, one thing that I know that you will say positive things about is American Idol. Now, we're probably... we're totally unabashed Idol fans. Colin, I can't remember exactly when you picked... You haven't been watching it since season one religiously, right?
No, I've watched since season one. I would say there's been a few seasons since that I've been a little bit more passive, but in the last couple seasons, definitely got back into it.
Yeah, I came in pretty, like, my When I originally lived in when I lived in Redondo Beach, 2001, I guess 2002, my roommate at the time, Allgood, and his girlfriend now wife, were raving about it for months, and or I guess for a month. And I ended up catching into it right when Kelly Clarkson did that one performance, everybody, that like old big band show, that thing like that there, song something called like that. So I caught it on a good night that you'd want to catch it. But since then, I probably have missed like a handful of episodes over the next few years. So it's been a big thing for me. Slim, when did you get into it?
Day one. I think we were in from day one, and the only... I had to miss season four, didn't see one episode of season four, completely out on season four, so I don't know.
You did not see one episode?
No episodes of season four, and we're back and forth.
That wasn't a good season to miss.
Yeah, like, whenever they show Constantine or Bobites, I have no idea, like, basically what was going on there.
I mean, you missed, like, almost the transformative season there.
Yeah, I don't mind missing that season.
What were you doing at that time that you just couldn't catch that season? What was going on in the Slim world?
There was a conscious decision, okay, not going to watch American Idol this season. And
was it because Fantasia won?
I figured who else could win now. I mean, that she is the ultimate American Idol, right? So that ended it. No, I don't know why. There was just, you know, a misguided decision to skip that season.
Okay.
But, you know, Taylor Hicks got me back, so.
All right. Well, we'll leave it at that then. Okay, so, you know, if you're still listening, it's because you like American Idol. So we don't need a lot of setup, but last night was the premiere of the new season with the new judges. No more Simon, no more Kara, thankfully no more Ellen, Steven Tyler, Jennifer Lopez, and unfortunately still Randy Jackson remain as judges. Colin, what did you think?
What do you want me to start with, the judges?
Yeah, let's start. Let's just start with the judges right out the gate. What did you think of them?
Yeah, I thought Steven Tyler. I mean, I'm not like a huge Aerosmith fan or big Steven Tyler fan, but I mean, he was pretty darn funny. You know, his commentary was it was. Yeah, I hate using the word, like, refreshing. But, you know, compared to, like, past years, it was definitely entertaining. I think he'll make the season more so than, you know, along with the contestants, but he'll make the season more so than, you know, obviously Randy or J-Lo. I think what he's going to bring to it is kind of finding some of the singers and supporting some of the singers that don't necessarily fit the typical, you know, vocal performer kind of mode, but, you know, a little bit more raw and
right.
Unpolished. And I think it's, you know, I emailed you this, but there were some semi-uncomfortable moments there. You know, they lowered the age this year to 15, so you have these 15 and 16-year-old girls auditioning, and...
Yeah, that's not
pretty
cool.
Sure Steven,
they gotta stop doing
sure.
that.
What?
So that's not cool. They need to stop doing that.
Yeah, but I'm like, there were some, like, somewhat uncomfortable, pervy moments from Steven Tyler.
Definitely.
Like, that one kind of too cute for herself girl,
the
or something like that.
Vanessa. Or something like that.
Yeah, he was, like, talking about her dress, and it's like, okay, she's 16.
Yeah.
Like, but, and then I think he was the one 16-year-old girl from Kosovo. So if I was 16, yeah, she's pretty hot. But, you know, he was, I don't know, just like the way his interaction with them was a little definitely pervy. But he's probably still banging 16-year-old girls, so he probably doesn't see anything.
You know, when he tours Eastern Europe, he's banging some 16-year-old. He's banging some
16-year-olds. That's true.
He's tearing through Germany and Sweden.
And then Jennifer Lopez, to me, like, she came across last night like she was, well, let me first say, like, I can't stand her as a person. Everything I've heard about her, read about her, you know, is just bad news. But
it's pretty hot, though.
Yes, I don't know. You go back back to, like, when she was a fly girl on Living Color. I mean, she was heinous. I mean, she's not a pretty girl. I don't think so. I think she probably, you know, that's not real hair she has. And she takes on the makeup, but she's not a pretty girl. But I thought she just came across like she was, you know, like past seasons when they had, like, guest, you know, artists
right.
on as a judge during the audition period. She came across like that. She really added nothing to the mix. And she has, you know, I mean, she definitely has tons of success as a singer and dancer and performer and actress that she could, you know, at least give these people some good advice. But, you know, one, she hated saying no, and two, you know, she would seem to say yes a lot easier than the others. You know, Randy, I guess, is supposed to step up as the critical one. You know, and I don't think he necessarily does a good job of that, but
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I just think Steven Tyler will probably make the season, and it'll be fun to watch him interact with the contestants.
Slim, what do you think?
I thought it was good. I think it's tough to kind of judge the judges at this point because there really isn't anything, you know, even Simon at this point didn't really critique anybody. You know, they're either saying yes or no, and when they're putting through, what, 100 plus people to Hollywood, they're just running it through. But I liked it. I liked Steven Tyler, and, you know, I thought it was funny. And Jalen was good.
Yeah, I think if they can keep Steven Tyler from doing any more woos and shit like that.
Yeah.
The less he does that, the better. But I was surprised. My initial visceral reaction when he came on was bad. And by the end of the 2 hours, save the woos, he kind of won me over. And even like the pervy comments, Colin, like you were talking about, like, I don't know, there was something pervy yet somewhat endearing about that.
Yeah.
So didn't mind that. J-Lo, I think, will probably, as this goes on, get better. But, yeah, she definitely felt like she was just a celebrity stand-in as opposed to permanent judge offering something,
yeah.
you know, good. But I think she's got the – I mean, like you said, everything about her in the press is bad. She's supposedly a bitch, not a good person. So if that's even half true, then she should be like LeBron and embrace the villain role. And, you know, maybe she's the one that could actually be the Simon as this thing, you know, moves on. And then Randy Jackson's just foaming at the mouth, blubbering full, and I don't think that's going to change. And I still don't understand, out of all the judges, how he's the one that got to keep his job. I'll just...
Yeah, did you notice that, like, I think he was doing such a bad job that it seemed like they were doing a lot of editing around his comments. I don't know if you were, like, picked up on that, but there was definitely a lot of, like, on the production side, a lot of editing around the judges' comments, and it seemed like, especially with Randy, it seemed like there was, you know, like, there were a couple of points, or a couple of spots, and I can't think of, like, specifically, but where it seemed like they cut off a lot of what he said beforehand or afterwards, just to kind of get his two cents in there, but
right.
they didn't get the complete thought because it was probably so bad. But yeah, I mean, Randy's not a good judge.
Yeah, and one other thing that they need to stop doing is way too many fist bumps between Steven Tyler and Randy Jackson last night. It's like every freaking comment that they made, there was a fist bump. I felt like I was watching Oral Hershiser at the NBC Heads Up. There's just nonstop fist bumping. So, yeah, something else I hope that they curtail a little bit at least. But overall, like, pretty good energy. I can't believe I just said that. But the, you know.
Yeah, I said refreshing.
Yeah, and you said refreshing. So I guess, Slim, why don't you throw out an adjective? Synergy. Throw something out there.
Unexpected.
No. All right.
No, so here's my main concern on that is this is the round. These are the rounds where, you know, you just kind of watch and nothing is really going on. And they always have the guest judges, right? It's always like Shania Twain or
right.
the guy from whatever that.
Neil Patrick Harris, who they should have had as the judge. He should have been one of the judges.
Yeah.
He was awesome last year.
Do you think they should have went Timberlake over Steven Tyler?
I'm willing to give Steven Tyler a shot. I think they should have gone if they were, it seemed like they were pretty zoned in on Tyler. So if they went like Neil Patrick Harris, Steven Tyler, and Kara DioGuardi, that would have been a workable panel there.
Yeah. The concern is when it gets down to 10 or even 6, like when the crowd is going crazy for that performance that just you're like, what? Why are these people cheering?
Right.
That's when Simon would step up and go against the grain and say, no, that sucked. Like, who is going to do that, you know? It seems like they're all going to get caught up in the, great job, when we need that, like, critical, you know, analysis at that point. And Simon was the one that was able to do it.
Yeah, and I think what they're setting up, they're trying to set up Randy to be more the critical one. I don't think it will work. The other thing I would say, too, is you were saying the judges, you know, right now we're just trying to get through the auditions, and then what really matters is what happens in Hollywood. And I actually think the audition sometimes is the most compelling part of the show, because you really have these characters that you know they're not going to go on to be in the top 10 or, you know, become American Idol, but you get to really kind of hear these stories that, you know, again, are pretty compelling, you know, kind of feel-good stories. And for a lot of these people, just, you know, waiting in line all day and then auditioning and then getting that golden ticket and going on to Hollywood is their victory. And that's kind of why I like watching this process. And I think the fact that the judges have that power, you know, in their hands, and sometimes, you know, they step away from talent and almost kind of are compelled based on, you know, the feel-good story and to just grant them, you know, that trip to Hollywood, even knowing that they're not going to, you know, I actually really think the process is sometimes the most, you know, much.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you on that they do a good job. And, you know, it's one of those things, I think we've actually mentioned this before, bringing it a little bit back to poker, that we could really use on the broadcast are, you know, it's a singing competition, but, like, let's say there's a two-hour broadcast, you might only see 15 minutes of singing because they get you emotionally invested in the personalities, and you actually care about them. And something that feels like is desperately missing from, you know, we've written about it on the WSOP broadcast or the PCA, is that we're missing a lot of that American Idol-like human interest story element.
When we were emailing today, like I was saying, the thing I really like about American Idol is you have people that, a lot of them, whether it's the kid from the Bronx or the girl from Staten Island, or dad has, you know, throat cancer, or you know, the family from Kosovo, and the girl is trying to make it to Hollywood and, you know, do good for her family. It's like you have these compelling stories, and a lot of these people have just been dealt bad cards in their life, and it's not, you know, anything they did in particular, but they, you know, a lot of people do have talent. With the way the music industry is set up, entertainment industry is set up, they would have no shot at ever making it big.
Right.
You look at even every pretty much American Idol winner, I think even Carrie Underwood, you know, like, none of these people really, you know, wasn't like their parents kind of raised them to be the next big star, like, you know, maybe a Beyonce or whatever, but, like, you know, it's just these people had talent and had a dream, but they didn't fit within the mold. And I find that, like, super compelling. And I think, like, you know, there's other TV out there, like Biggest Loser and so on, you know, that's compelling. But, again, like, I watch that and I'm like, well, these people got themselves in that situation.
Right.
But American Idol has, as a strength, is the fact that, like, these are people that would normally be shunned. They have, you know, some talent. Here's their chance to make that, you know, dream come true. I think poker, like you said, has a lot of that story. I mean, if you break down like half the Vietnamese players, that, you know, it's not something we've talked about a long time ago. It's just a lot of these people, I think what makes them good poker players is they've been dealt bad cards throughout their life and they made something out of it.
Yep.
So they're not necessarily waiting to always get like pocket aces or ace king. You know, they know how to play shitty cards.
Yeah.
You know, both metaphorically and, you know, and really. So, I mean, like, I think poker, you know, I bet you, you know, if you break down, and I don't even know where I'm going with this, but if you break down, like, a Dwight Pilgrim, you know, like, if you got him on an American Idol-type show, but talking about, you know, or produced a package like that, it's probably a compelling story about a guy who, you know, is grinding it out on the tournament circuit and scratching pennies together to make it happen just for this dream of, you know, winning the WPT title.
Right.
You know, and that's the kind of story that I think poker needs more of.
That's what really caused the poker boom when you think about it. I mean, you had accountant from Tennessee that, you know, certainly he wasn't broke, but he wasn't doing great, that, you know, wins a $38 satellite on an online site, and then he's $2.5 million richer. I mean, that's almost what was responsible for the poker boom. But yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm with you. And you know, on one hand, it's like, it's great seeing these people feeling like they got a shot at the dream. At the other hand, it's like, who hasn't gotten a golden ticket? I mean, you got probably a couple thousand people at this point that have. I mean, basically the same number of people who won a World Poker Tour title by now. I mean, who hasn't?
Maria Ho
made it to Hollywood.
Yeah.
Didn't she go like down to like the top 38 or 40, something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
The Fantasia season?
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Hey, Flamino Maria Ho, right?
What's that? Who's that?
Who? Say what? But, okay, so standout contestants last night. Who do you, at, you know, 18 hours later, who do you still remember?
Travis Rolando, no question.
Yeah, I think Travis is the one that sticks out the most.
I don't think they gave him enough credit for his voice. I thought he had a killer voice.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't. I mean, I thought I think singing the Beatles tune is kind of like the new, Proud Mary or whatever. It's kind of like, it's the right way to go.
Yeah.
Actually, it was hard to say because I think Steven Tyler liked hearing it so much. That's why he quickly said, let me hear another song.
Right.
But that package that they produced, leading up to him singing was so well done. You know, you're already rooting for him before he even sang, and you already got a sense that he, could sing, and that singing was his life. It was very much Andrew Garcia's story last year.
Yeah.
It's almost spot on. It's just more the East Coast, New York City version of it.
Yeah.
But, and just kind of seeing the response, like, one thing that's fun to do during like a show like American Idol is go on Twitter and do like a search for that person's name, and like he was already a trending topic. People were already, saying I'm going to vote for him all the way. So he's already building. You know, part of this is having a fan base. So he's already building the type of fan base that you need to make it at least in the top 10. So I think we can pretty much lock him up for, definitely one of the finalists in Hollywood.
Yeah, it feels like he should go pretty far. They did a good job with it. I mean, he's definitely going to have a following. He seemed like actually a really cool kid that we were talking about it earlier, that when he did the Jason Mraz song and he just said typical, kind of understated off to the side. But you're like, okay, that seems like a cool kid. That's a good comment. And his shirt, like everything about him, there was a good vibe around him. Slim, did you like him?
I liked him. I mean, you brought up Andrew Garcia, and, there's no bigger Andrew Garcia fan than me.
Really?
I love Andrew Garcia. I mean, I still YouTube his clips, on a regular basis. I thought he was great. I thought he got a little lost last season with the judges' comments. He didn't believe in his track. He kind of tried to be somebody else. And hopefully this kid stays true to whatever that is. I worry that he might be, there's always that one person where you're like, oh, for sure, like final 10, or he's going to be top 4. And then, somewhere along the line, they get, they bust out, and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Why
didn't you tell us that this kid busted up?
Kid.
Yeah, they always do that. One thing I'd like to see them do on Idol that just would be fun is do a story like they did with him, like the backstory with Orlando, and then it turns out he just bombs, and he's a horrible singer.
that's the other thing. Sometimes you see that clip, and then once they have to change it a little bit, then that's what happened to Andrew. He had to sing a little bit differently, and he couldn't pull it off. Some guys can do it. Some guys can't.
No, but I'm saying a little bait and switch where they give you the glossy tearjerker clip, make you, because as soon as they go into the sad music and the sob story, you know that the kid's going through.
he's the last one, right? And then he just came in and just was terrible.
Right. So they should give, they should dedicate that and do a little bait and switch on us, and then it turns out that the person's horrible or just mediocre and doesn't get through. I want to see that once or twice. It'll keep us guessing, yeah, if nothing else. Anybody else stand up? To you guys?
I think Caleb. I think his name's Caleb.
Yeah.
He was the guy in like the blue and white striped shirt.
He's like one of the first people that went, right?
Yeah.
I think he could be one of those people that you'll forget about over the next couple of weeks, but he'll come back up later on. He had a pretty unique voice.
Yeah, I can buy that.
It was refreshing.
How about the Kosovo girl? They didn't do do wonders for Kosovo tourism on that one, but how about her?
I don't think she was that good.
I think she's really good. I think the scene waitress is pretty good.
Yeah, she was great, and they gave her all those coded words, like, you know, basically telling her she wasn't pretty enough.
Yeah.
But she was awesome. She had a great voice.
Well, I think she's like, she had, you know, like, just objectively, I mean, she had a pretty good body. I think the advice they gave her was probably good advice. You know, like, she probably doesn't have the confidence, you know, when it comes to, like, dressing, you know, a certain way. And I think they're just saying she should have that along with, you know, a girl like that who, you know, is semi-attractive, but can sing really well. It's like, play up, you know, some of your assets. So,
yeah, and
it's
funny that you brought up the body thing. They kept on going to a side shot with her that I was like, wait a minute, she's got a pretty good body.
She got a rockin' body. I mean, she really does. Like, are we talking about the Kosovo girl?
No, talking about the singing waitress.
I'm kidding. but I think the synovitis kid, I think he was pretty, he sang yesterday.
Right.
The wheelchair when I was a kid. All these people are 16.
I know. I hope that, like, the problem with that, like, I understand, like, that's going to be great for probably ratings. The problem with it is it's going to probably sap a lot of the originality out of it. Like, there's never been the 16 to 18 year old that's gone all David Cook or Blake Lewis and reinvented songs.
Yeah.
That's not what they're strong at.
Yeah.
They're just going to whip out ballads.
And we've seen, except for, like, Jordan Sparks, I guess, we've seen from a voting perspective the votes tend to carry those people so far and then
drop
all
off.
Of a sudden, like when they down to the final four, they drop off.
Yep.
But do you really need another white guy with a guitar winning this thing? You know, like Chris Allen, Lee Dweezy.
Yeah.
Why? What do you got against white people?
Oh, and by the way, Travis, not white, but parched, he may have some white in him somewhere. The Travis kid does play guitar too, so I think that, you know, we just saw him sing last night, but he plays the guitar as well.
Yeah, nobody brought in instruments. Were they not allowing that again, or?
I don't know.
I don't think they've ever had instruments at this point, right?
I thought they did at one point. Maybe they didn't, though.
So what do you guys think, just to kind of wrap up the characters, or the contestants, does it bother you that they have, like, the Jersey Shore chick or the Britney Spears fan, you know, like that they, I mean, they're basically bringing them to Hollywood just to kind of make things interesting and entertaining later on, but these people have no shot of really going far. Is that just kind of wasting everybody's time, or does it make for good TV, or?
A little bit of both. You know, they have a history of doing that with that Norman Gentile guy from a couple seasons ago, and they've had people like that. So David Archuleta 2-3 years ago. So I guess it's okay. I mean, they're okay TV. And ultimately, it's not going to matter. It's not like they have a limit of spots that they're giving away. So it's not like, you know, hey, we only give 220 tickets, and that took away from somebody else. So if they were taken away from somebody else, I'd probably say, yeah, that's not cool. But they're not taken away from anybody else, so it's okay.
Oh, and real quick, but I meant to bring this up earlier, is Ryan Seacrest.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, he's done, when it comes down to Hollywood, he does a great job hosting. Shots we talked about before, like how bad Nick Lachey was,
yep,
and how you can, you know, learn a lot from Ryan Seacrest, and he's developed over the years. Very little, they used to, and I guess we'll see more tonight and in the coming weeks, but they used to deal a little bit more with Ryan Seacrest. curious is something that made the show the last, you know, like three or four seasons was the kind of bickering between Ryan and
Simon.
Will it be kind of boring, you know, and make it tougher for Ryan to kind of, you know, do his job without having any kind of tension with any of the judges?
It might. I never actually thought about something like that. It could, for sure. You know, last night definitely it just felt good because, like I said, good vibe, you know, change of pace, wasn't a train wreck, was expecting a train wreck, so pluses all around on that. But didn't think about, like, the long-term effects of it. I don't know, Slim, what do you think?
I was never, like, a big fan of that interaction. Like, most of the time it felt a little forced, the interaction, and a lot of times Simon didn't even play along. Like, there were times when Ryan would get a good zing in or Simon would here and there, but a lot of the times it just kind of fell off. I think Ryan, you know, he's going to carry that show whether he has someone to interact with or not. And who knows, maybe he'll develop some rapport with J-Lo or, you know, with Steven Tyler.
Yeah, Ryan was always the character that kind of sided almost more with the contestant. You know, he was on stage, but he was kind of there to make him feel better about whatever Simon said. So it just will be interesting to see how, you know, like, his role up there, you know, especially if the judges are a little bit, you know, too kind. And I think the best thing that could happen is if J-Lo just lives up to her reputation and becomes a villain somewhat.
Embrace her inner LeBron.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's plan on doing the American Idol chat a little bit more regularly. Maybe within the next week or two, compile some lists. We can go over what we want to do on email, but, like, you know, from best performances of all time to whatever else. So let's make this a little bit regular, and maybe we can even throw in some Change 100 in the mix too, because I know she's a big fan. And keep the dialogue going over the course of the season. Slim, thank you for joining. Anything you want to plug on the WPT side?
Let's just check out WPT Live updates. We'll be in Biloxi starting on Sunday. So you want to check out the Southern Poker Championship. And lastly, you know, don't text while driving. I think that's the message that we learned last night. It's very dangerous, and it's something that everyone should be aware of.
Forgot about that. All right. Colin, we'll talk soon. We've got a This Week in Poker scheduled again. Sorry for the abrupt cancellation, but we're back on track again on Tuesday with This Week in Poker with Matt Savage. And I think that's it. Let's plan on doing this again next week, though.
Cool. Sounds good.
All right. Talk to you guys later. And that is it for the Wicked Chops podcast. This will be available for download on iTunes if you're not already on iTunes and listening to it as is. And we'll get up another one next week. Till then.